It's 6 o'clock Thursday night and time to kick off Super Scoreboard on Clyde One.
Good evening and welcome to Thursday's Clyde One Super Scoreboard with me, Jerry McCulloch, on the show tonight. Less than 48 hours until the Scottish Cup final kicks off between Celtic and Aberdeen. We've been speaking to Craig Gordon about how he took his first win for granted and he never thought it would take him 11 years to get the chance to win the famous old trophy again. Bobby Madden is the man in the middle on Saturday. We've been talking to him about his preparations and the kinds of things he keeps in his mind and puts out of his mind. We'll also have a chance for one of you to win a pair of Celtic tickets to the cup final. Stay tuned for that. Mexican midfielder Carlos Peña says he's in talks with Rangers. Pedro Caixinha knows him from his time in Central America. Could Peña be one of the new arrivals at Ibrox? Rangers fans, give us your thoughts on that. And also tonight, of course, with it being the 50th anniversary of the Lisbon Lions' achievement in becoming the first British team to win the European Cup, our second hour will be dedicated to that famous day and that legendary team. Hugh Keevans caught up recently for a friendly chat with Jim Craig and Bertie Auld, so expect plenty of laughs between 7 and 8 as they all take a trip down memory lane. Gordon Dale and Mark Wilson are here though, taking your calls for the first hour. You can get in touch by giving them a call on 0141 951 1025. You can tweet us at Clyde SSB. Gordon, I very nearly didn't make it into the studio.
Why?
Tonight on time, because Mark Wilson was standing outside and I thought it was a traffic light and I stopped.
There's a queue around
a bit of sun over the last few days.
There's a great phrase that I won't use, Jerry, in Glasgow. And it says
a well-skelped,
whatever you want to do. I've never seen anybody's faces red as a blood term. No, it's great tonight that the fact that the Lisbon Lions are, you know, you're paying a fantastic tribute. I was very lucky that two of the Lisbon Lions actually signed me.
You what?
Yeah, I played under two of them.
Bertie Auld.
Well done, you.
Yeah.
And Billy McNeil.
Billy McNeil. Yeah, two terrific guys. And the one thing that you gave him the answer.
What?
I can't believe. Do you know, it's like beating the pundit all over again.
I didn't give him the answer. I gave him a comeback to you slagging him off.
All right.
By saying his face is only just the colour of your nose.
Yeah. and do you know the great thing, Jerry? And I go back to this. I was very fortunate that it was the old days before, obviously, Mark was born, and
me,
and you probably.
Thank
yeah.
You.
Okay. Fine. And you used to go after training, and remember the big bath that all the players used to jump into? Nowadays it would never be acceptable. And you would listen to guys like Billy McNeil and Bertie Auld talking about the greats of Jimmy Johnson's and, you know, Bobby Murdoch's and all these guys that, and the stories that they can come out.
Can I just ask, did you never ever kind of realise or take notice of the fact that what you were doing in that bath was really unhygienic?
Yeah, I did once or twice, but I done it with a smile on my face.
When you're in there.
I mean, the concept of 11 or 15 guys jumping in the same bath after a game, I mean, sweaty body.
That's team bonding. Team bonding to the next level.
But do you know something? And guys in the older age, it sounds terrible now, I must admit. I'm going home for a shower. In the olden age, see that bath, the stories that you heard, like say when I was
about what went on in the bath.
No, at Manchester City when Big Billy used to talk about his great days at Celtic and the Lisbon Lions and Bertie and his stories and everything like that. It was a real education. I was the longest in the bath.
Right. Okay. Listen, we've got plenty of time the next hour to get into education. I wonder which team will be getting an education tonight at Tannadice, because of course Dundee United take on Hamilton Accies. This is a massive game for both sides. Of course, it's the first leg of the Premiership playoff final. Dundee United won the round of the championship, if you like. Hamilton Accies lie in wait, as does Dave Galloway.
Hi, Jerry. Well, it's a beautiful sunny evening here at Tannadice. The pitch looks perfect for a really huge game like you've just touched on. The Accies got a boost, of course, with last weekend's 4-0 win over Dundee, and that was much needed as it came after four successive defeats. Accies boss Martin Canning says the pressure on both sides is equal ahead of this playoff final first leg, and he's hopeful that if his men give it everything tonight and again on Sunday, they can get the job done and preserve their top flight status.
Now, the guys last night on the programme, Dave, I don't know if you heard them, both Jim Duffy and Mark Guiri, yep, both tipped Dundee United, which would kind of buck the trend, wouldn't it, of the Championship team winning promotion?
Yeah, it certainly would. I think it's going to be very, very close. Accies, they do have a good record against United, and here at Tannadice, they're unbeaten in the last four meetings with United, and they won on their last two visits to Tannadice, both in the Premiership last season. So hopefully they can keep that record going.
Are Dundee United ready to come straight back up to the Premiership and remain there, Dave?
I think they are. They've got some very good, talented players on their books. They certainly showed a lot of fine fighting qualities last Friday at Falkirk. They really showed a lot of guts and determination. They've got a lot of skillful players as well. Tony Andra could be the ace in the pack, but I think if Hamilton can keep him quiet, then that might be halfway to getting a good result.
Well, him you say, Dave, but also Simon Murray. I mean, Simon Murray
as well.
He scored in all four playoff ties.
Perpetual motion. He's not the most skillful player in the world, as he would admit, but his attitude to the game and his non-stop running, he's a real pest. He'll need to be watched very closely also.
All right, so we'll be back with Dave when teams are announced, probably in around about 40 minutes or so. So there seems to be a lot of positivity here for Dundee United. Gordon DL, who are you going for?
Not for me. I watched Hamilton Accies last week against Dundee, and a lot of people can come on and say, well, Dundee were safe, they were in holiday mood. Yeah, can totally understand that. I think I'm disagreeing. I don't think Dundee United are ready to come back up. I know it's Mark's old club. Used to love going there and playing, a terrific place to play. I think Accies will have too much over the two legs, Jerry. So let me tell you, seeing Monday, Hamilton will still be in the league.
Well, that's 2-1 then for Dundee United. Mark Wilson?
I'm going Dundee United. Mould team.
Surprise.
Mould team, no. But I'd like to see them back in the Premiership. Big club, you know. Obviously, I've got feelings about the club. And I just think the way they've been playing, and that, you know, always talk about momentum at the right time of the season, that just winning mentality, I think, might just carry them
over
the
line. Did they free you or sell you, Mark? I've always wondered that.
Well, they sold me first time round. I think I paid the players' wages for a few years.
And then what happened the second
then
time?
Then they freed me. They had enough of me.
I'm going to hear from Craig Gordon in a sec. The number to get through to the guys, 01419511025. I want your thoughts on the Scottish Cup final, of course, on Saturday. Barry McEntee's got in touch to say, hi, Jerry, can you and the boys say happy birthday to my son, Barry McEntee Jr., who was born on this famous day 15 years ago.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, how old is he?
He must be around about 15, I think. We don't normally do birthday shout-outs, yeah, Barry, but
happy
there you
birthday.
Go. We'll make an exception. Yeah. Let's hear from Craig Gordon, who says he took his first Scottish Cup win for granted and he never thought he'd have to wait so long for another. The goalkeeper, of course, was part of the Hearts team, which lifted the trophy 11 years ago after a penalty shootout win against Gretna. Gordon, of course, has the chance to win it again when Celtic face Aberdeen on Saturday, and he's determined not to let the opportunity pass him by.
It's a great opportunity to go and make history, be, you know, one of the best teams that's ever played for this club to achieve something like that. So, it's something that, if we can do it, we'll always be remembered, and you know, to be part of something like that, it's very special. You don't get many occasions during your career to try and get something like that on your CV. So, we're looking forward to it. I remember thinking that was probably just the first of many opportunities that I would have to win my cup competitions. And the older you get, you don't realise that those don't come along very often, and especially one like this with the chance to go and get a treble. So, yeah, that was a great day for me to win the Scottish Cup with Hearts, and to do it again and be part of a treble season would be unbelievable. You never know how many more there's going to be. Probably took it a little bit for granted the first time around, but you know, everything that goes on in a career since then, it's for anybody, the closer you get to the end of your career, the more important these become. Even at a big club like Celtic, you know, we've not managed to do this. My third season here, we've not managed to win it since I've been here. So yeah, they don't come around as often as you would think. So we have to make sure we enjoy it, but the only way to do that is by going out and winning the game.
Mark Wilson, you surprised?
I was, yeah. I just assumed that Craig Gordon had won more Scottish Cups than he did, you know, just the level he's played at, and obviously been at Celtic for a while. But he's right, they don't come along as often as you think, so you need to really cherish them when they do, and you know, take it all in as best you can. And you know, Saturday will be a great occasion for both sets of players. A fantastic day, a great day, and I was lucky enough to be involved in a couple.
Many did you win, Mark?
Two. So they're just great days to be involved in. I've lost two also as well with Dundee United, and that's hard to take also. But just the spectacle and the final game of the season.
Do you think from a goalkeeper's perspective, right, everybody wants to be the hero in Scottish Cup final day, do you think at the back of the goalkeeper's minds they're thinking, I hope this goes to penalties
so I can save the penalty kick? Yeah. No, I don't think. No. I think it's just a case of let's win this game and get a winner's medal. I was very fortunate. I played in two as well. I was terrific in the other 10.
Reminiscing. I watched five in the telly. Yeah,
the other 10 let me down, and we lost the two to Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen.
Was that it? Is that the point? Yeah,
That's it. So I've got two losers, Mark's got two winners.
Well, there you go. Do you think Craig Gordon will get a winner's medal on Saturday?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to say, I know Aberdeen are different now under Derek McInnes in the sense of, I think he's got to be more positive, Jerry. When I watched the League Cup final, I've got to say, I was really disappointed in the way they went about their business. They sat off Celtic, the new Celtic were so better than them, and it was just a case of go and win the trophy.
The only thing is though, you know, Derek's got that game to show the guys, you know, there you go, we don't want a repeat of that, you know, so it's, at least kind of no stone unturned for him. You know, don't give us a repeat of that, guys. We need much better. And it's going to be a tall order, but still, I can't see them upsetting Elds.
A tweet from John Boy, who calls himself Once a Tim. Jerry, tell Gordon that either that after, with an E, after the Coca-Cola Cup final in 94, I hated him, but now, all these years later, he's my favourite pundit on the show. There you go. He's gone full circle. Here's Colin in Easterhouse, a Rangers fan. Hi, Colin.
How you doing, Jerry? How you doing, Mark? How you doing, Gordon?
Hi, Colin.
Gordon, you're not my favourite pundit, Gordon.
Colin, you're not my favourite caller.
I know that. Anyway, it's a wee bit light-hearted this night, Jerry. I think I'm the only Rangers fan that celebrate this day. And it's not for Celtic winning the European Cup. My sister turned 50 today.
Oh, really?
Aye, dairy numbers.
Aye, no, it's no difficult, aye. So, is she I'm not trying to pratt, is she an elder sister or a younger sister, Colin?
She's an elder sister.
Right, okay, so I was going to actually ask you to cast your mind back and remember the day when your wee sister was born, but it's a bit difficult.
I got all the stories. She was born in the second half of the European Cup final and all that caper, and I'm right, okay.
Oh, she was actually born during the game?
Aye.
She missed the first half?
She missed the first half, aye.
She didn't miss much. First half has been rubbish.
And she is a Celtic supporter as well.
Is that right?
Aye.
So when your sister was born, Celtic were 1-0 down, and your sister was born and Celtic scored twice to win the European Cup.
I knew I didn't like her for a reason, Jerry.
Colin, what was her name?
Christina.
Still is her name, Gordon.
Yeah, sort of blown it there. See if it had been Big Tam or something. You know, I'd have liked something like Big Tam or something like that. Aye, Chamo.
Can I, see, since I've shared that with you, I wish you all the best on the radio.
Aye, go for it.
Sister, love you a bit. Happy birthday.
Aye, she's out celebrating, isn't she, tonight, Colin, obviously.
She ain't listening to you, mate.
I know. Thanks a lot, Colin. Nice touch that, Colin, from Easterhouse. It's approaching 6 o'clock, approaching 20 past six, rather. I was interested in the Lisbon Lions documentary last night in the BBC that I watched this morning. And one of the things talking about, you know, being born on that day, Celtic went on a 6-week tour of America before they played in the European Cup. And it was Bobby Murdoch's wife, I think, being interviewed for the programme, and she said that her son was born 9 months to the day that Celtic came back from their 6 week tour of America. She said, thank goodness he wasn't early, or there would have been questions asked. Right, how do you fancy a double pay weekend this weekend? Well, you could be £2,000 richer if you enter Clyde One's 2K Day. All you've got to do to be in with a chance of winning the cash, yes, you know it, text the word yes to 61025. We'll choose a winner completely at random tomorrow morning when the lines close just after 9 o'clock. The lines will close at 9 o'clock. We'll choose a winner at random just after. Now remember, if your postcode begins GMLFKPA or KA, you are eligible to enter, but only if you have a postcode that begins like that. Test costs £1.50. T's and C's. Online entry at Clyde1.com. You're listening to Thursday's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard, the home of football in Glasgow and the West. Be part of the debate. Call now 0141 951 1025.
With William Hill, proud sponsors of the Scottish Cup. Please gamble responsibly.
It's 24 minutes past six on Thursday's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Celtic fans, do you think it's going to be a walk in the Hampden Park on Saturday afternoon to win the treble? Aberdeen fans, do you think you're going to spoil Celtic's treble party in the last game of their season? Give us your thoughts. 01419511025. Mark Wilson, Gordon Dale here, ready to debate with you. Now, he's appeared at European Championships and taken charge of Old Firm games, but Bobby Madden admits there's a bigger feel about the Scottish Cup final. The 38-year-old will be the man in the middle when Celtic and Aberdeen face off at Hampden on Saturday. Madden's been telling our reporter Gordon Duncan how he's preparing ahead of the big game.
It's obviously my first Scottish Cup final, you know, and I think the fact that I'm at Hampden today talking to media highlights the importance of the match. My normal build-up to match wouldn't change, but this week there's a lot more interest, a lot more focus, a lot more conversation between my friends and obviously my team ahead of the match on Saturday, just to make sure we're fully prepared.
I mean, you've obviously done high profile games before. How does that differ? I mean, does it feel any different leading up to this than it does leading up to a normal game, and if so, in what way?
It feels different in the fact that it's, I think, the Hampden, the occasion, the cup final, it's always been seen as what's the last day of the season, essentially. I know we've got a playoff match the day after, but I think everyone always sees the Scottish Cup final as the final match of the season, so that brings its own amount of attention. I've done a lot of high profile matches in Scotland and abroad, but you do feel there's an extra bit of focus on this. You've got two very good teams, there's a lot at stake for both clubs, you know, and I think everyone's really focused and putting in a good performance on the day, as the referee team are.
Aberdeen will have a game plan, Celtic will have a game plan. What's Bobby Madden's game plan?
My game plan, as much as I go about every game, you know, I try and communicate with the players as best I can, and the players are receptive to that, and they respond to that. The laws of the game are there, you know, for me to apply, you know, but I think try and work with the players to manage our way through the game as best as we can. Each team will have their own tactics, how they intend to set about it, but I'll try and let them play as much as we can and have as little involvement as is necessary.
How much preconception do you come into this game with in terms of how the referees approach things? Are you already aware of X player is likely to foul or this player's likely to hold from corners? Do you go into games with that type of mindset?
I think we don't try and look at individual players and how they commit fouls or offences or their attitudes toward us. You know, what I do is I prepare, I look at the team's tactics, how they've set up against each other previously this season, how they've set up in their recent matches. But a lot of focus for me is on set pieces, corner kicks, free kicks in the final third, you know, because I think there's a statistic that 28% of all goals are scored from set pieces. So teams are aware that there's a massive advantage can be gained in being well organised at set pieces. So the referee team have got to be aware of that and be switched on.
Are you able to separate what's happened in previous games that you've refereed involving the teams? Because we know what football fans are like. I am sure they have got a list of so-called misdemeanours that you've made against Celtic and that you've made against Aberdeen, and I'm sure they'll be cast up all week long. Are you able to just push all that out of your head?
Yeah, I think, I mean, referees are their own biggest critics, you know. After every match I'll review the full match, everything that's highlighted, you know, I'll even look at things that aren't highlighted, you know, so I'll look at them, I'll learn from them. I think every referee is the same. Yep, spectators will have their own opinion who have handled certain situations or incidents. I don't think about that. I think about dealing with this match and being totally focused and concentrated and not being the story of the cup final.
Ultimately then, is a good afternoon for you if no one's speaking about you on Sunday morning?
Ideal. I mean, we come in and the Scottish Cup final's all about the build-up. They're talking to the managers, the players. I mean, I'm here today, but I'm hoping, obviously, on Saturday evening, Sunday and thereafter, that there's no mention of Bobby Madden and the referee team, and it's all about the players who were successful on the day.
Interesting insight there from Bobby Madden when he spoke to Gordon Duncan earlier today about the preparation. You would have thought referees maybe were just kind of, you know, cramming the rules again or something, just getting their fitness right. But tactics?
I would never have thought that. And it's very interesting, you know, looking at teams' tactics and then the set pieces and how to set up. And no, that surprises me. It just goes to show you a lot of work goes in to being a referee that we probably just take for granted that they run out.
I'm trying to think, what can they get out of knowing how Derek McInnes sets up his team against Brendan Rodgers?
I think it's nonsense.
Come on, he's in a bad mood today.
I think it's absolute nonsense. Are you telling me a referee is sitting watching Celtic and Aberdeen?
You think Bobby Madden's trolling us? You think he's lying to us for a laugh?
I don't want to say lying, right? I think it's an absolute nonsense. Are you kidding me? Hold on a minute. I'll see the tactics. I'll see whatever. I'm all for referees. And he's right. What I would love on Sunday is, and well, Monday for your last show, Jerry, which we'll all be tuning into because we would like to say a fair goodwill to you. Make sure you leave. I want to be talking about the football. I want to be talking about the goals. I don't want to be talking about referees. But for Bobby Madden, and I don't really know Bobby Madden that well, but to turn around and say, well, I've been studying tactics. Come on. Come on.
Of course he has.
Dummies are silly. What tactics?
Well, he's just explained what tactics.
What? A set plays. What happens if Celtic change their set plays? What happens if Aberdeen change
Well, then
set
he'll
plays?
Have to adapt to
why
that.
Why does a referee need to study tactics of the opposition? Why? I can't understand that.
Well,
you need
perhaps.
To tell me that.
Well, perhaps. I don't know. But if you're an assistant referee, perhaps if you've seen, let's say, Aberdeen do a particular set piece which involves breaking an offside line, or as you say, Mark, a tactic that involves blocking, you need to make sure that block is on the legal side of blocking. So therefore, you look out for it.
But you make that.
Good point, Jerry.
It's not a good point. Shut up, red face. Right, you make that decision on the day. You don't make that with a prejudgment of thinking, well, I've watched how Celtic or Aberdeen do this. You've got to call it on the day, Jerry.
Yeah, but he'll do that as well. Of course he'll do that as well.
No, I'm sorry, I'm not having it.
Anthony Neil says, as usual, I'll go for a 1-0 win, but something tells me it won't be that close. I just hope we don't go easy if we go 2 or 3 up. I think Anthony is a Celtic fan. Jamie Barr says, early Celtic goal, Aberdeen need to attack, Celtic comfortable win. The longer it's 0-0, the more Aberdeen will come into it and it will get nervous. Or he says he is nervous. Is an early goal important for Celtic?
Always in a cup final.
Yeah.
I think that it'll settle the nerves of everyone concerned. I think Celtic obviously are going to get into this game massive favourites. Of that, there's no doubt. They're looking for a treble. There'll be a little bit nerves there. They've went unbeaten in the league. They want to finish the season on a high. Aberdeen have come into some good form. Okay, you know, you look at Partick Thistle's last two results, the Celtic and Aberdeen's been poor. Yes, fine. But what a great job Alan Archibald's achieved there. And a one-off, you're always nervous. And Mark's been involved in them. I've been involved in them. You're always nervous, Jerry. You don't want to make that mistake. You don't want to make that, like Mark, a bad tackle, pass back, own goal. You know, terrible header, all that. We've seen what he's achieved.
He's on my case tonight, isn't he?
And he claims that one goal that hurt the divot is still still at the park just now, trying to get repaired. But I think it'll be a nervy situation. But if Celtic turn up and they play to their best capabilities, they will win.
I think it'll be quite an open game. You're hoping for a game like the one at Pittodrie, where there was a couple of early goals and then Aberdeen came back. You're hoping for that, but it will be nervy. The players will be nervous, but I can see it being quite an open affair with a good few goals in it. Let's hope there is anyway.
Who do you fancy, Mark?
Or Celtic, but I can't say by Celtic.
So he goes for Dundee United tonight and Celtic. Yeah, exactly. What a pundit you are, Mark Wilson.
Jerry, check the Fisher list to see if he's playing. Else he's playing.
Well, Dumbarton, they're not playing yet. Jamie Barr says, surely if the ref has seen a block in the previous game, the ref will be looking for the block.
Yeah,
it's called refereeing. Anthony McGinty says, studying tactics to know when to give a dubious call. See, this is it. You want referees to come out and speak and give interviews, and then when they do, you slag them off and say they're lying.
I'm not saying they're lying, stop that.
He's just not telling the truth.
No, I just don't see why you have to, as a referee. I'm sorry, Bobby Maddon deserves the cup final and we wish him well. Don't tell me he knows what tactics is. And I know what you're talking about with blocking people and stuff like that. There's decisions I would rather get into for a referee and make it on the spot rather than thinking, do you know what? I watched that 3 days ago. That must be a free kick. That must be a penalty kick. That must be X, Y, and Z. I think you get yourself too complicated.
All right, well,
with
here's
it.
One. Here's one. I like to play devil's advocate, and I've just put myself in your corner, right?
Oh, right.
I must admit, I want to get out pretty quickly, putting myself in your head. But that's an interesting point. Let's say if you're an assistant and you're seeing something, or if you're a referee, you're looking at the block. Because you've seen an illegal block before, maybe in your head you'll picture it being an illegal block again, when maybe it's not.
Correct. That's my point.
Perhaps, yeah.
This is my full point.
You should have made that point.
Well, you've just helped me out. And this is why you've got two or three shows left. And why we're all going out on Saturday night to celebrate your leaving. So, no, thank you very
celebrate
much.
Celebrate. Put that way.
But I just think that if you're getting into that cup final, and I hope that the guy has a good game, and I'm sure he will. I'm there for Super Scoreboard. But I don't think you should get complicated, Jerry, by thinking, well, I've watched this free kick and I'm looking for something. And while you're looking for something, you could be missing something else.
What did you make of the news this week that Ryan Jack had been stripped of the Aberdeen captaincy for Graham Shinney, Mark Wilson?
I thought it was the right call. I never like to see that happen. But in terms of the circumstances, I don't think Ryan Jack will play anyway. But in terms of... I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But... I think Shinney's been a leader all season for him. He's a good captain, strong, and he's played to a standard which has been exceptional this year. So it's not a bad choice. But in terms of the, you know, Ryan Jack perhaps moving on, I know it's not confirmed yet, but it's pretty much there.
Well, no, he is moving on.
Yeah,
we know that. But
yeah,
whether it's Rangers or not,
I just think it's the right choice. And like I say, I'm not too sure anyway if Jack would start the game.
Well, it's going to be an occasion anyway for Graham Shinney, particularly if Aberdeen do win and he picks up the cup for the second time in 3 years. Here's James in Springboyk. Hi, James.
Hi, how you doing? How you doing, guys?
All right, James.
It's just a wee point what Gordon's talking about, and he thinks it's nonsense about the referees. What I got from his interview was that maybe he's talking about, when it comes to tactics, is Bobby Madden's positioning. If a team plays a long ball all the time, then he can maybe pick up a better position. Mm-hmm. So what happens next, or if a team maybe plays intricate passes running about the box and stuff, they can maybe get yourself in a good position and maybe spot a free kick or something.
Yeah, but what happens? Right, you've got to explain this to me then.
Right.
So you'll need to phone up Brendan Rodgers and you'll need to phone up Derek McKinnison, and you'll say, guys, what sort of game are you going to play on Saturday? Are you going to play a long ball? Because see, if you're doing that, I'm going to watch your tactics and I'm going to run up the park. See, if you're going to play a passing game, I'm going to run about the semicircle and I'm going to watch you play the passing game. So my tactics are spot on.
Gordon, what do you and Mark talk about during the week? Just talk about the opposition and how they play the game.
Oh, I don't even talk to him.
Do you discuss their tactics?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's probably what the referee's doing. He just wants to get himself into a better position.
Mm-hmm. But we are trying to beat the opposition. You know, we are playing against them.
Yeah, they're in charge of people who are allowed to kick the ball, James.
Yeah, but you can understand what I'm trying to say is, he just wants to get into a good position. Mm-hmm. If you know a team's playing the long ball all the time, the referee could be running up and down the park all the time.
Yeah. No, it's a fair point, James.
Right,
Wants to take on Gordon Dale's welcome on this programme.
No, hold on a minute. So Bobby Madding sees Celtic or Aberdeen at the back and he runs away up the park because he thought, I've studied their tactics. What happens if they pass the ball about at the back?
Well, then he looks a bit silly.
I would go over to Brendan Rodgers and say to Derek McInnes, sorry, I've studied your tactics.
Don't do that
again.
You're
playing the long ball.
Right, I did say last night that we'd do this ticket competition again tonight, so let's do it again. We have got, courtesy of William Hill, two tickets, a pair of tickets for the Celtic end of Hampden Park to give away to one lucky listener. All I want you to do right now is listen to a bit of commentary from a Scottish Cup game involving Celtic. We have beeped out the name of the goal scorer. All I need you to do is to give us a call, which you're all doing right now before I've even started the clip, and let me know who scored the goal. If you're first on and you get it right, then you win two tickets for the Cup final on Saturday. And we keep going until we do get a winner. Here is the clip.
Give Celtic the lead, using every one of his 6 feet 5 inches, rose above the every defence. Celtic could not have asked for a better start.
I don't think this one will last very long. Who scored that goal for Celtic? You're listening to Thursday's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Scottish football has a voice. Add yours to the debate on Super Scoreboard. Call now 0141 951 1025.
With William Hill, proud sponsors of Hampden Park. Please gamble responsibly.
Who scored this goal for Celtic?
Give Celtic the lead. Using every one of his 6 feet 5 inches, rose above the every defence. Celtic could not have asked for a better start.
Yes, believe it or not, it was a Scottish Cup final. Airdrie in a Scottish Cup final. Gordon Dale, Mark Wilson. Remember the heady days. On line A though, let's see if we've got a winner. Jerry Toland is there from Paisley. Hi Jerry.
Hi, how you doing, my man?
Alright Jerry, from one Jerry to
all
another.
Right, boys, how you all doing?
Hi.
Good,
Jerry.
Thanks. Jerry, who scored that goal?
Pierre Van, how you doing?
Do you have tickets for Saturday, Jerry?
No, I don't.
Would you like tickets?
Yes, I'd love tickets.
Have you been trying to get tickets and couldn't get them?
Yes, I'm still trying.
Well, try no more, Jerry.
Yeah, Van Hooijdonk, give Celtic the lead. Van Hooijdonk using every one of his 6 feet 5 inches.
As you heard from Hugh Keevans there, Pierre Van Hooijdonk scoring the goal. Well done, Jerry. You've got the tickets.
Oh, I can't believe it, man. I'm over the moon.
You are indeed. Well, you're in Paisley, but anyway.
I'm a season ticket holder, but I've just lost out in the balance.
You never, ticked a box, did you?
No,
see there, listen.
I missed one of the Scottish Cup games due to work.
Who are you going to take with you, Jerry?
I might take the missus, but she's in the shop now and I stayed in the motor.
So she doesn't know.
She doesn't know.
Alright, so you've sat in the car while she's nipped into the shop. You've heard the competition, thought, I'll give that a go.
I just missed it last night. I just popped up in the shops last night and I missed it.
Well, that is brilliant, Jerry. Listen, congratulations. Stay on the line. We need to get you the details as to how to pick up your tickets. Okay, mate?
No problem, mate. Cheers.
Brilliant. All the best, Jerry Toland there. In Paisley. Amazing what goes on out there.
I would wait till she come out to see what shopping she brought out.
I just want to hear Hugh again.
Yeah, Van Hooijdonk.
Hooijdonk. Is it adding another letter?
Say that again.
Yeah, Van Hooijdonk.
Hooijdonk. He's added an A. There's no A in the middle.
Maybe he's right and we're all wrong. All right, Hugh. Calm yourself. Where'd that come from? It's playing itself now. Right, we're going to go to Tannadice shortly when Dave Galloway has team news. Remember, Dundee United against Hamilton Accies tonight, the first leg of the Premiership playoff final. Gordon Dalziel and Mark Wilson still here. Let's chat briefly about this fire sale list that got leaked and got announced yesterday. We believe most of the names on that are correct. For a start, the likes of Joe Gardner appears to be up for sale. I mean, I know, listen, Jim Duffy said last night, listen, everybody at Rangers is up for sale, everyone in Scottish football is up for sale, but to see the list of people who Pedro Caixinha has basically given the thumbs down to, the likes of Waghorn, Garner,
do you know
Windass,
what creates a problem
Crooks,
there, Jerry? What? Quite simple for me. He talks about things being leaked out of Rangers that he's not happy with. So we've had the fire sale this morning. We've all looked at the papers. We've all looked at the names. What happens if you can't get rid of the players?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to then go next season, at the start of the season, and say to these guys, I want you to go out there and give me 100%.
Can I just tell you, sorry to butt in, but exactly 50 years ago to the second, or rather 10 seconds ago, Tommy Gemmell equalised for Celtic.
Back in the game, we're back in it.
Oh, come on, Inter.
Against Inter Milan. It was exactly 50 years ago to the minute where Tommy Gemmell equalised for Celtic. Thanks to various news outlets who are doing a kind of an up-to-date tweet as if the game is on just now. Daily Record, Scottish Sun. Goal, Celtic! Finally, Tommy Gemmell's bullet strike put Celtic level. Game on. Of course, we all know what happens.
What was the stats you were telling us about the attempts on goal?
It was something like 42 attempts
that's
on goal for Celtic.
Incredible.
See, that's the difference, Mark. When you look at Tommy Gemmell's goal compared to your one against Rangers, that's what you call a goal.
Both of them hitting it. Both
anyway,
of them hitting it.
Going back to this list, I know what you're saying, because if he can't sell these players, then he needs to
he's
use
got a
them.
Problem.
And everyone knows he doesn't rate them.
He's got a problem.
Yeah.
But how do you expect to come out with an okay? We can say that the Rangers manager can come out and say it's paper talk, right? He's already come out and said, I do not want things leaked out of Rangers. And we wake up this morning and everybody's looking at this list. I don't think there's any chance in this world he can get rid of every one of the players he wants rid of, because they're on too much money, Jerry. So he'll have to at some point get back and say, I'm going to play you tomorrow. I want you to give me everything you can. And as a player in March, we've been in the game. You're looking at a manager thinking, why should I give you everything you can when I can, when you're obviously don't want me? And the only reason I'm here is because I'm on the money.
Well, my thing I said last night as well is, if you're an agent or another club and you know that Rangers are clearly wanting to sell players because they want to release wages or whatever, you're probably going to take
just the price.
You're probably going to, either that, or you're going to take this list of players that Rangers don't want and you're going to say, no, forget them. Let me see the list of players you do want. Because I know you need money.
Yeah, and plus the fact, you've got to understand one thing. These guys are on decent cash at Ibrox. They're sitting there, you know, 2 or 3 year contracts. And I don't blame them at all, because at the end of the day, they signed a contract that someone brought them into the club. And it doesn't matter how much you give them. They're entitled to sit there and take their money. You think for 1 minute we're all guys that try and earn a living, they're family guys here, they might have young kids, they've got mortgages, they've got bills to pay. You think if you're sitting on $5,000 and then someone comes along and says, well, Rangers really don't want you, we'll give you $2,000, what are you going to say? No chance. And this is where I think this guy has got a massive summer in front of him. I can't wait for it.
Let's head to Tannadice for team news ahead of Dundee United. Hamilton Aki's there for us, as Dave Galloway.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I can tell you one change for Aki's. Firstly, in comes Massimo Donati. Out goes the injured Mickey Devlin. So it's Remy Matthews in goals. A back three of Scott McMahon, Massimo Donati and Alex Gogic. Across the middle, Giannis Skondras, Ali Crawford, Darian McKinnon, Danny Redmond and Dougie Imrie, with Rakesh Bingham and David Templeton leading the attack for Hamilton Aki's tonight in this vital match. The subs are Gillespie, Doherty, Dacol, Watson, Longridge, Want and Woods. Dundee United, perhaps not surprisingly, their starting lineup is unchanged. Cammy Bell in goals, back four of Sean Dillon, Mark Dernan, William Edgingelli and Paul Dixon. Midfield, Blair Spittle, Willow Flood, Tony Andra, Watu Kuati and Thomas Mickelson, with Simon Murray up front. The subs for United tonight: Zwick, Donaldson, Robson, Toshney, Coot, Telfer and Nichols.
Thanks very much, Dave Galloway there. We'll bring you the thoughts of both managers tomorrow night on Super Scoreboard. I'll be in the studio with Hugh Van Hooijdonk and Derek Johnson. I should say, whatever Hugh is, if he's on Twitter, he's all of a sudden now getting people tweeting him about Van Hooijdonk, and he's probably wondering what on earth is going on here. We've got a few minutes left before we hand over to the second hour of the programme, which is, of course, our Lisbon Lions tribute. Hugh Keevans in conversation, going down memory lane with Bertie Auld and Jim Craig. It's a fantastic hour. Stay stay tuned for that. So what would you do then, Gordon? If you are wanting to get rid of some players, you have to get agents involved. You kind of know it's going to get out then. How would you go about it?
I think you've got to sit players down, look them in the eye, tell them their future's not there. But the problem you've got, Jerry, and as I touched on, you've got to make sure you don't have to go back to these players. This is your big problem. Football players, it's a different breed now from, as I told you, we used to sit in the bath and talk about the old days. It's completely different now. Football players are managed by agents. I never had an agent in all the years I played and managed. They get communication from everyone, what to do, where to go, what to say, what not to say. I think the Rangers manager's left to sell a massive problem. And I'm looking forward to having a nice holiday and coming back, because it's going to be an interesting summer for Rangers and everyone concerned.
Do you think these players will find clubs? I mean, can players who have essentially failed at a club find another club quite quickly?
Of course they can. Yeah. Of course they can. Well, I don't know how quickly. You know, it sometimes takes a lot of time, a lot of summer, because people don't want to pay you straight away. You know, they'll wait to the last minute. But some of the names on the list, I was surprised, especially Josh Windass. When I seen that one, I thought,
well, his dad has denied it. Dean Windass, it's fair to say, has said
I thought he looked like he had a promising future at the club, but just goes to show you he wasn't fancied. And some of the names who Pedro Caixinha wants to keep are equally surprising. You know,
Barry McKay, are you surprised that Pedro Caixinha doesn't see a future for him?
Well,
considering how highly Mark Warburton thought of him.
Yeah, listen, I think Barry McKay's a top player, so I'm surprised that, you know, they're trying to punt him out the door. Obviously trying to get a bit of money in, but I think if you're going to build a successful team, you want to keep your most exciting and young talent, and he's certainly one of those.
Right, not long to go, I can tell you, it's still Inter Milan 1 Celtic 1. Tommy Gemmell
wonder
with
what's going to happen.
Equaliser a few moments ago. Can I make a prediction? I think Stevie Chalmers might get the winner.
Are you going for a 2-1?
I'm going for a
2-1. Get a fiver on that.
I'm thinking extra time penalties here.
And if Stevie Chalmers...
No, it was a toss of the coin then, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I'm thinking...
Was it no penalties back then?
No, they used to toss a coin when it was... Was it not a draw? Am I that old, Jerry?
If Stevie Chalmers does get the winner, I think there'll be a huge celebration in the Hydro tonight.
Yeah.
That's what I reckon. Right, so that is what we will be doing next, of course. It is 50 years to the day since Celtic beat Inter Milan, although Athletic Coy says, oh, sake, Jerry, don't spoil it. I'm Sky Plusing it. It's 50 years to the day since Celtic beat Inter Milan, of course, and became the first British team to win the European Cup. Jock Stein and the Lisbon Lions are being paid tribute to across the country tonight, of course, the big do at the SSE Hydro. I know a lot of Celtic fans are going to that, and a lot of other kind of news outlets and whatnot have been doing their own tributes to the Lisbon Lions. So we thought, what could we do? And we thought, well, listen, we've got Hugh Van Kievans here, so the best thing to do would be to get a couple of Lisbon Lions in a room with Hugh Keevans and just let them talk. And when one of those Lisbon Lions is Bertie Auld, you know you're going to get some stories. You know you're going to get some good chat. So that's exactly what we did. Hugh Keevans chatting with Bertie Auld and Jim Craig is your second hour of Thursday's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. I'll be back tomorrow at 6.
This is the home of football in Scotland. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
With William Hill. Proud sponsors of the Scottish Cup. Please gamble responsibly.
May 25, 1967 is the most famous date in Celtic's history. The Lisbon Lions is the name given to the most famous team in Celtic's history. There are children whose mothers and fathers weren't even born when Celtic beat Inter Milan to win the European Cup who can recite the names of Simpson, Craig, Gemmell, Murdoch, McNeil, Clark, Johnston, Wallace, Chalmers, Auld and Lennox. Tonight, we mark the 50th anniversary of Celtic becoming the first British club to win the European Cup by talking to two of the Lions. It is my pleasure to welcome to Super Scoreboard Jim Craig and Bertie Auld, or Kearney in 10:30, as they were nicknamed in the team that Jock Stein took from being domestic underachievers to the pinnacle of European football. Jim Craig, Does the memory of the Estadio Nacional still send shivers down the spine half a century on?
It does indeed. I've been fortunate enough to be back a few times since then, and it makes me shudder every time I appear. But I was thinking about, you know, the game during the week there because the papers were discussing the size of pools that some football clubs had, you know.
Yeah.
And we had a really small pool of players for, you know, a season like that. I mean, we had Ronnie Simpson, obviously, of the team in Lisbon. Ronnie Simpson was backed up by John Fallon. The two fullbacks, Tam and myself, backed up by Willie O'Neill. Bertie and Bobby Murdoch in Middle of Park, backed up by Charlie Gallagher. And then we originally had six forwards, but Joe didn't play. Joe McBride didn't play after Christmas.
Yeah.
So you had five forwards as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that is astonishingly small number to go right through half a season.
Yeah. Bertie, what does the 50th anniversary mean to you?
I don't know, but listening to Jim, I think Jim, if I'd been in Jim's position, I'd have had nightmares for the last 50 years after that penalty. He says it wasn't a penalty, but it was a diabolical penalty. Yeah. But as you can appreciate, what it means to me is something that continues to... honestly, when I say this, our dressing room was something special. The people that was in it. And Jim mentioned the players that never played, unfortunately. But we were so close and such like. And every game was just the most important game. It wasn't just because it was Inter Milan. It was just another important game in front of us.
Mm. Have they got the statues right outside Celtic Park, Jim? You're both Lions, but outside Celtic Park, there's Big Jock, there's Wee Jinky, and there's Big Billy McNeil.
It wouldn't have been done without Jock. I mean, I'd just signed for Celtic before he arrived, so I couldn't compare what it was like, you know, before he got there for any length of time at all. But when he came in, you know, the training I noticed did improve. We did much more with a ball, and in terms of his being a new guy in the team at that time, I mean, you couldn't have had a better manager to bring in, because he was very determined, very single-minded. Everybody knew their place. Everybody knew what they were supposed to do in the team. And, you know, you watch teams nowadays and you sometimes think that the players are not on the same wavelength with each other, or everybody at that time was on the same wavelength as each other, because she wanted attacks to come from all corners of the pitch, you know, and for them to come in and have, you know, two fullbacks that could get forward and get back again and stuff like that, and wingers and midfield players that, it was a dream job for him, but without him, it wouldn't have worked at all.
Big Billy headed them out, and he kicked backsides all the way through Europe.
Yeah, I mean, we were pretty strong in nearly every position at the time, and I think he was the man that just gelled it all together. But good backup team as well: Sean Fallon, Neely Malkin, Bob Rooney. You know, it was the four of them got on very well with each other, and the players of the unit got on very well as well, you know. Bertie's got worse in recent years, but at the time he was pretty good, you know.
Bertie, what would Jimmy Jones to be worth today?
Oh, you couldn't put a figure in it. As a matter of fact, you know how Celtic's always been a selling club? That's one they couldn't have sold.
Yes.
Because he was everything that the supporters, everybody in football... That's what they wanted, entertainment. And Jimmy was an entertainer. People think he was just a dribbler on the ball. Jimmy was a majestic. He was majestic near. You could finish. But the most important thing was the one between his lungs, the heart.
Yes.
He was a Scotsman through and through. The lion was, hearts was there.
Who was kicked black and blue on occasion and still came back for more?
Well, you know, I will not mention names, but there were some characters that were just brutally booting him and such like, and he would pick himself up and he'd say, "Are you trying to intimidate me?" And then all of a sudden the guy knew, the next ball he got, he went at him and by him. He would nutmeg him and do everything that every player would wish to do.
Jim was touching on the fact that he wasn't there in the less exciting days before Lisbon, but you were. You were there in the 50s when Celtic had gone years without winning a trophy. What was the difference? What happened?
The 50s, 60s and 70s, I was there, Hugh. It was some era.
Yeah.
Because, as you can appreciate, I came in contact with my stay brothers, George Patterson. Johnny Crum, Jimmy McGrory.
Yeah.
What a man. Beautiful, a gorgeous guy. And then as in the 50s when we had the Charles Patrick.
Yes.
Bobby Evans and Bobby Collins. All these players could have played in any era. But they had an era and they had history that they bounced about. I mean, the Jimmy McGrory, Matt Lynch, and oh, we could go on. They would come up to the training and they would always mention it. And when Jock took over, that's what he said to us right away. Now this is our era.
Yeah.
Let's make history.
When you left Celtic and went to Birmingham, did you realise that life in the Midlands wasn't like life at Glasgow and at Celtic Park?
Well, you must remember, Hugh, the furthest place I'd been before that was Girvan, where my ma came from, you know what I mean? And my dad came from Bridston. So it was two places that I knew about but never ever experienced. And I was supposed to go to Everton with Bobby Collins as a double transfer. And I says, I'm not going anywhere because I didn't know where Everton was. Even if they'd have mentioned Liverpool, I wouldn't have known where it was. So anyway, to say that then, and 2 years later, I went to Birmingham. And I must admit, I was so fortunate. And the place itself was very homely.
Yeah.
The supporter wasn't the same in numbers, but the same heart
yeah.
of the players that was playing for them. Whenever you walked down the street, people were over speaking to you and such like. So that was a great thing for it. Made me feel at home right away.
Yeah.
It was a great education playing down south because at Celtic Park, whenever we were training, you'd train round the track until such times that you were tired. Not because it was hard work, it was because it was boring, you know. And before that, we had Jock. Jim mentioned it when he was with the reserve team. Oh, he was something special. He should have been ambassador for British football, never mind Scottish football.
When you come back from Birmingham to Celtic Park and Jock was there.
Yeah.
Was that when your career really began?
I knew Jock was coming. I was so fortunate that a friend of Jock's had said to us that he had accepted the job but couldn't come. Mind you, that wouldn't have changed my mind. Because I always felt as if I was going back to Celtic. Anyway,
yeah.
You had to work under the man. Whenever he came as coach, reserve team coach, the first team had a first team player taking it. Each day it was a different experienced player that did the training. But it was the same boring thing.
Yeah.
But when Jock became the reserve team trainer, when he was still a player at Celtic Park, although he had the bad injury, he took over the... I promise you, everybody stopped and watched him.
Yeah.
He introduced the ball first and foremost.
Yeah.
You know, it's like asking the likes of John Higgins to get up a hatchet and go around the trees and chop down the trees rather than play snooker, you know what I mean? Jock brought this ball and everything. We did more training and work, exciting work, because you got up in the morning and want to get to your work, you yeah. know what I mean? And Jock introduced that.
We'll get to the genius that was Jock Stein later, Jim, but do you still, 50 years on, get people coming up to you and saying, I was there?
Oh, yes. And, you know, many of them were because, you know, it was a trigger for just Celtic fans to travel abroad. Up till then, holidays were around about Scotland, Ireland, or south of England or somewhere like that. People didn't really go to the continent. That was a great trigger factor for people to just think that I quite fancy going there. And you know yourself, the cavalcade, the Hill and Imp cavalcade yeah. that left from Linwood to travel down there by car, journey as well. So it was just an occasion where a lot of people went abroad. I had a bit of trouble with my dad. Was reluctant to come because he felt that Inter would be too strong for us. So I got him a ticket, I got him a seat in the plane, and then I had to persuade him. And it was only on the Sunday before the Thursday that he said he would go. And he flew out the day before the game. And when I gave away that penalty, which remains the worst decision ever in international football, by the way, right? He turned to my Uncle Philip up in the stand and said, I've come all this bleeding way to see that, by the way. So I can imagine how he felt.
Bertie, you must get stopped regularly by people to say, do you remember me, Bertie? I met you in Lisbon.
That's right. And they said, I was on the park. That's the most important. I was on the park. I was on the park. But you'll not believe this, Hugh. This is no kidding about. A month ago, I was asked to go up to Bishop Briggs. it was a question and answer with the Celtic supporters in this pub,
yeah,
right across. And before that, two of the lads were waiting to come in, and a Hillman imp was sitting right outside the door on the pavement, and I don't think the police had any chance of moving it. And it says, we went over and collected this. This is in the last couple of years. He says, and by the way, we're going back over in it.
Yeah.
And you want to have seen it. It was awesome. It was lovely. But Jim's right. At the end of the day, everything that happened 50 years ago, it seems to me like yesterday.
Yeah.
Because we, at any time we come in contact with anyone, Celtic supporters, or even individuals, just to know what like it was, that was the first thing they says. What like was it in the dressing? What like was it flying over? And it was something special. I will never forget it.
This is the 50th anniversary, Bertie, but will you take that memory with you forever, that day?
There is no way, I promise you. When I was a player, you would at night, you would go to your bed, win, lose, or draw, and you would play the game over and over again in the ceiling. You know, when your wife was sleeping, you were still awake, and what could we have done? What we could have done? But you, the Lisbon Lion ones come, the Lisbon game comes all the time. It doesn't matter what time or where, it comes all the time.
Okay, Jim, take us back to May 25, 1967. One of the great quotes attributed to Jock Stein was, "We did it by playing football. Pure, beautiful, innovative, positive football." Does that sum it up in a nutshell?
Indeed it does. I mean, that had all been dealt with the night before. You must remember, this is going to sound like the Dark Ages, but we never got the chance to see games in those days. You know, we played teams that nowadays you can just watch them on television, can't you? You
and know, analyse them.
Analyse them. And the rest of it. Somebody went to see people play and came back and told you how they played. Now, as a fullback with a winger against me, the question I wanted to ask was, how quick was he? Is he tricky? You know, and they didn't really take those kind of things into account. They were looking at the overall team sort of pattern, how they played or something like that, you know. So there was always that little bit of a doubt back in your mind before you went into a game, just what you were faced with. But Jock Stein at that time was, the night before the game, was really, really positive that we were going to play positive attacking football.
Yeah.
And the whole team was laid out on that basis. And, you know, it worked,
yeah.
You know. I possibly helped in a way. I didn't think I helped at the time, but the very fact I gave away the penalty meant that they went back to what they were comfortable with,
yeah,
which was the Catenaccio system. Sit back, make the occasional break. So that gave us almost immediate access to the ball, and we could control the game.
The Inter manager, Helenio Herrera, came across as a kind of arrogant, aloof man, Bertie. Now, folks, yeah, like yourself from Maryhill don't take kindly to that. Is that why you started the Celtic song in the tunnel, to get the players whipped up?
Well, Jim brings out a word that, honestly, that sums us up tremendous. He turned round and says all the time, we're in our dressing room, we're gallus. In on the park, we're gallus. We come from Glasgow and 30 miles apart, we're gallus. And it doesn't matter what any of them said about us, we just went out and believed in ourselves. Do you know the most important thing about the boss? At no time, what he says is before the game, go out and enjoy. Play to your capabilities. Never ask you to do anything you weren't capable of doing. He allowed us to do what we saw on the park, individually, collectively. We were good players. We were a good team.
So you're standing in that tunnel. You're looking at these Italian superstars,
yeah,
beside you, so you think, let's have a sing song.
No, well, first of all, Jimmy Johnson, who was two or three behind us, and he says, he shouts and he's calling me wee man, and I had to look down to him. You know? I says, what is that? He says, look for them, look at them. He says, they're all film stars. I says, I know, but can they play? And then it just came natural, because Jim will tell you, even the bus going to Fir Hill for Celtic Park, it's only, but we used to be at 10 songs in it, by the way. Oh,
but
Celtic,
don't forget, songs. Sorry to butt in, but don't forget, before he started singing, Jimmy was trying to negotiate a jersey swap with Facchetti after the game. You know, in kind of pigeon English, and Facchetti, I don't think spoke any English at all. He wanted a big man's jersey at the end of the game.
Why? How could you be so relaxed?
Because Jimmy was just like that. If you had talent like his, there's every reason to be relaxed.
But all of you, you're trying to become the first British club to win the European Cup.
I wouldn't say relaxed is right. Gallus means you're confident at what you're going to do. You can still be a bit nervous at the same time.
So you were nervous.
Actually start it. No, my nervous time was always the day before when the team was read out and the plan was put on the board, because I would think the opposite all the time. That won't work. He can't do that.
I think you were gallus whenever the guy was taking the pen.
And I really got kind of very upset at the time with that. Closer it got to the game, I was okay. Better I felt. When I walked out the tunnel, I was no nerves at all.
You want to have been in that dressing room. It was something special.
Yeah.
I mean, the jinky man, he was ducking and diving. You would think he was out in the park. Big Billy was strutting about, and his Tommy Gemmell, he was like Man Mountain, and his chest was sticking out. As a matter of fact, that's when the jersey looked too tight for him. His chest was there. Now, we knew how good we were.
Yeah.
And we never ever went to our heads, because Jock would never allow it. He was no longer putting you back down. And the most important thing he used to say is, never humiliate your fellow professional. But that's what we made today when we made it to play Inter Milan. They were wasting time for the first touch of the ball, Jim. Yeah. And say, I mean, I promise you, if you ever have a chance to have a look at it, the way they were kicking the ball away and putting the ball 4 and 5 yards in front of them, they knew that they were under pressure and they were winning the game over quicker than what we were wanting to play, because it was the first time we played under sunlight.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard, the home of football in Glasgow and the West.
With William Hill, proud sponsors of the Scotland national team. Please gamble responsibly.
When you came out of that subterranean tunnel, Jim, and you looked at the Estadio Nacional, it's not a classic football stadium.
No, but a very attractive stadium. Yeah. You know, they had spoiled it slightly by putting up the temporary arrangement for the press, because normally that area lets you see through to the trees and everything, you know, so by putting that there, that spoiled it a wee bit. No, I mean, my memory of the day is that we were confident right the whole way through. We had a good conceit of ourselves, you know. I don't mean we were big-headed or anything like that, but we knew we were a good side. And we'd got to a position that, you know, nobody expected us to get to. We had played well en route. We had some really good performances. And we knew we could turn in another one. So, surprisingly, it may seem, I remember us being quite confident.
We know how your father felt when Milan went one up, but how did you feel when Mazzola scored the penalty? Because it's a heavy burden to bear.
Sure. I was raging at the decision, because, I mean, I've said it many a time and people don't believe me that I work out things like that when you're playing, but I ran across his path. He was an outside left going down the inside right channel. Chances are he's going to pull it on his left foot. So I merely ran across his path. And he went down like a sack of potatoes.
It was an amateur thing he'd done. He tackled with his right foot across the guy, and we could only go, and that was doing the way.
It always looks worse, I think, than it really was, you know. But in the first place, it'd be very few referees would have given a decision in the fifth minute of a European Cup final like that, you know. In fact, Jack Mowat, after the game, said, back in Scotland, he would have given an indirect free kick, because that got everybody off the hook.
Yeah.
You know, you're not making a major decision.
It wouldn't have been for Celtic. How many games is it?
So you're one down, Bertie. The Portuguese thought you were more Latin than Glaswegian because of the dark hair, swept back, and the way you played your football. Did you then think, right, we'll come into our own now?
No, that didn't change us in any way. That was the most important thing. That was a decision that was made, and it was the right decision. I don't care what anyone says. It was the right decision. He tackled with his right foot across the boy's hips. His back was to the laddie. But you must remember, Jim was a dentist and also came from university. University. It was a bad penalty.
We must also remember he laid the ball on for Tam Gemmell to score the equaliser.
Well, that was after about, 70 or 80 minutes. All of a sudden, his head came through the clouds. But seriously, it was a we had worked on all these things, and to, for goals behind, and the great thing about it was so early in the game, it didn't change us in any way. It was confidence oozing out of you. When you've got players like some Murdoch, Johnson, you know what I mean, Bobby Lennox, Stevie Chalmers, Wispy Wallace, and each and every one, we had nine potential goal scorers, Hugh.
Yeah.
So nothing changes after 5 or 10 minutes.
Sarti in goal for them, though, was having a wonderful day.
Yeah.
Was there ever a moment where you thought, are we going to beat this man?
No, well, I'm going to say there were a day when that was said and put into our way of thinking, because the boss turned around and says he's weak. The weakness of them was Sarti.
Right. Yeah.
And by the way, if that was him weak, the rest of the world. But no, and never at any time, Hugh, because as I said, she had nine potential goal scorers, and it never stopped for the first kick of the ball in the season to the last kick of the ball. That's what we're that many match winners.
Are you sorry? After the classic Tommy Gemmell goal and the typical Stevie Chalmers opportunistic finish to make it 2-1, are you sorry that you didn't get up for the official presentation with Billy? Billy McNeil was the only one who was there because of the crowd being overexcited and coming on.
Yes, I think you could say that it would have been nice to get what they get nowadays, you know, the chance to take a lap of honour and all the rest of it. But fans wanted their day as well, so, you know, they gave us great support during the game, so I've no problem with that.
Do you remember the clamour in the dressing room, Bertie, with Bill Shankly coming in and saying famously to Jock Stein, "John, you're immortal," and the players apparently, led by Ronnie Simpson, who was the oldest among you, in tears?
Well, I kind of remember old Ronnie really crying, but he might have done, because I was never that far in front, because all the Portuguese supporters weren't in as well, and there were no programmes for us to see or anything like that. Do you know something, Hugh? It's something that each and every one of us remember from start to finish, and if we don't, someone else will come out and say, "Can you remember that?" We all got our own. We speak about the park itself. I promise you this much. I loved every minute in the park with our supporters.
Yeah.
Because they were part of it from start to finish. And for Billy to go up and get that trophy, I believe Billy was the fittest of us all.
Yeah.
That's how he did that. I don't know. We were, the rest of us was knackered. And we're looking for something to eat and a wee cup of bevies, you know what I mean?
Do you remember much of the remainder of the night, Bertie?
Yes, because we got. I remember when they gave us the medals. They were in shoeboxes, Hugh. Honestly, they were in shoeboxes, and they're coming across, and it was A for all right, yeah, and they just come walking over. In the actual restaurant, wasn't it?
Nah, it was disappointing.
That was disappointing. You know what I mean? Yeah. That was.
We had to wait a long time for them to turn up. To be perfectly honest, when they turned up, they were all right. It was the manager was the problem. The actual players themselves were okay, even at the end when we got a chance, they came over and shook hands, you know, where they could. But the manager was a bad-tempered guy, you know.
But you can't expect somebody to go to the European Cup final. I mean, it wasn't as if you could have went to Jock in the Feyenoord game and said, "How you doing? Did you think of the game?" No, his head was down as well. When you lose something, particularly a club as big as Inter, in the same status as Celtic, you know what I mean? It's very difficult to actually get the head up and push it over. No, you're disappointed and then you show it.
Jim, do you occasionally reflect on what Lisbon and the winning of the European Cup meant to Celtic as a club? And has meant for half a century.
Well, a seminal moment in Celtic's history, wasn't it? It's the moment that put Celtic up amongst the big boys, because up until then they were a Scottish club that had done well in British competitions. We'd won the Empire Exhibition Trophy in 1938, the Coronation Cup 1953. But they suddenly stamped Celtic's name in Europe. And not only that, I think the performance that day, the way we played, was beneficial to football, because up until then it had been the preserve of Italians or Benfica as well, and Real Madrid. So after Real Madrid, the Italians played a very defensive system. So Celtic's victory in 67 broke that, you know, and then Man United did it the next year. And then AC Milan from Italy in 69, but they were then, by then, playing some very good, attractive football as well. So for the next, you know, decade at least, it was all teams from the northern half of the country, or the northern half of Europe, that that dominated it. Ajax and Bayern Munich and so on.
Bertie, the man who does something first is the man who gets most of the credit. Jock Steen was the first man to win the European Cup. Is genius too great a word, or is genius an inadequate word to sum him up?
Honestly, I'd say inadequate without fear of contradiction. The man was a genius. Well, here again, they say it was a Scottish club, but I'll tell you, it was the first British club to do it.
Yeah.
And they all had chance after chance and couldn't do it, couldn't get into that position. The boss came in. I think one of the best results for us, believe it, and it was against us, was Liverpool beating us in the Cup, Winners' Cup, in the semi-final at Anfield.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, in the whole of Europe, they turned around and said, oh, it's a wee Scottish club. Aye, they got a wee bit of luck, they get into the semi, but Liverpool beat them out. They didn't realise, and they never tensed, they should have taken note of what we achieved in the Cup Winners' Cup. Because that was a... And then when we played Manchester United...
Pre-season.
We turned them over, I think it was 4-0 or something.
4-1.
And that was...
4-1.
4-1 was 4-1, it? 4-1. I can't remember again up half of the part, but you could be right, Jim. One. But as you, and what I'm saying to you is they, I don't think they ten us in a situation this is a threat. But whenever you see the results we had, not just at home, away from home as well. We beat everybody away from home. And that would have gave me, I'd have stood back and say, what's going to happen here? We were, but the big thing and the most important thing, when people came to Celtic Park and they heard that singing and the applause and the Celtic support was, they were our 12th man before substitutes.
I think you must also take into account, Hugh, that there were some good teams in Scotland at that time as well that we had to, you know, oversee every week. And the thing that happened time after time was, because when people look back, they say, how did you only manage to score one goal against such and such? All these teams regarded it as a cup final when Celtic came to their ground, because they were going to show this team that was doing well in Europe that they were as good as us, and all rose to the challenge.
Can we pause and remember some men here? Ronnie Simpson, Bobby Murdoch, Tommy Gemmell, Jimmy Johnston. There are 7 surviving Lisbon Lions, 4, sadly, have left us. You'll obviously at this time, Bertie, cherish memories of each of those 4 men.
Well, for a starter, Simpson, he was always calm at all times. If you would ask us, were any of us uptight before games and such, naturally you wouldn't be human if you weren't, because it was such an important thing playing for Celtic. Now, Ronnie was the type of guy that they would get everybody in and individually come over and speak to us and such, like, you know, because he went through from a 16-year-old who was capped with Scotland amateur level, and then at 38-year-old he was capped with Celtic, and he was that type of character. We had that, and then we had the captain himself, Billy, who he was an awesome laddie, you know what I mean, and everybody respected him.
Uh-huh.
Because he looked after, and he was one that would knock doors if he had to, if there were some complaints coming from the rest of the 10 players. And Billy McNeil was always underestimated. And it was frightening when you look back and see how little caps he got and such like.
Yeah.
You know, he was respected all over the world.
Billy, of course, as we all know, is fighting illness, the way he fought everything else bravely. How do you think of Billy now, Jim, at this particular time?
Well, we're all, you know, very disappointed that Billy was one of the guys that's been caught by this dreadful disease. As a player, magnificent in the air. When the ball came into the box or anywhere in our half, you could always rely on him to get his head to it, you know. And the number of goals he scored at the other end shows you how good he was at coming forward to do it as well.
Yeah.
And he was a very inspiring captain, because he just led by example. He didn't have to say a great deal or anything like that at all. He just he did his job week in and week out.
For
and
you, that was, for you, did he epitomise Celtic?
Yeah, well, I first met him when I was captain of Scottish schoolboys at Celtic Park in 1961, about April, I think, 1961. And Billy by that time was set a half for Celtic, and he had played the same fixture a few years before, and they brought him in to meet us all. And of course, I remember that he doesn't, you know, because it's just another crowd of boys to him. Uh-huh. But I remember beating him, that was in April 1961, and 6 years later I was playing alongside him. Uh-huh. So it just shows you how in football, anything is possible.
But it'd be a wonderful thing for Liz and for the McNeil family to have Billy watching the celebrations and knowing that he will forever be enshrined in history as the first captain to from
well,
Britain.
Well, that is there already. I mean, he was the first British captain to lift the trophy, and the great thing is he was in a Celtic jersey when he was doing it. You know,
yeah.
So. That was wonderful. And the family are very proud of his achievements. And it's just a tragedy that he has been caught by such a dreadful disease.
You spoke movingly at Tommy Gemmell's funeral recently of being asked to babysit Tommy occasionally.
Yeah. Well, that can be a bit difficult to deal with sometimes, you know. And... you know, Joke made it quite clear that my job was to get him down for breakfast, lunch and dinner, get him on the bus at the right time and all this, but, you know. But he was a good guy and we had good fun together, and our room was always an interesting place to visit. but, you know, the most important thing was he was an outstanding fullback. Oh. And turned that, you know, when he first joined Celtic, in my early days as well, fullbacks were not encouraged to cross over the halfway line. In fact, he told me that just before I arrived at Celtic Park, he'd been told by a member of the coaching staff that if he crossed the halfway line once more, he was out of the team the following week.
Yeah.
But then Jock came in and wanted everybody to get involved in attacking moves as well as defensive moves, especially if you were at the back. And Tam got a chance to come forward, and boy, did he really take advantage of it.
One of the things that Tommy said was of Lisbon, it was a victory for the working class of the west of Scotland. Now, you weren't political warriors, but were you like that, Bertie, this band of brothers who never forgot their roots?
Never at any time. No, never at any time. Didn't matter what we achieved, no. We were just individuals who became a great team, and we worked as a team, and we if you kicked one, you kicked them all. But the thing is, and 9 out of 10 were supporters. So, and since the 50th, this is the 50th anniversary,
yeah.
And it doesn't matter where we go, any part of the world, the Celtic supporters, they're wanting to be with you. They're that type. But going back to Jim there, Big Jock, we had Willie O'Neill, who was a magnificent defender. Jock never changed much, but he changed Willie. He put Willie on the bench and brought in Jim because he was looking for more coming from the fullback positions.
Yeah.
And he had Jim. Jim was a tremendous, very fit, and he went back and forward, back and forward. When Tommy was playing right back, he very seldom got the ball off of Jimmy, laying it off for. And also, it was a different angle when he was coming from right back, because Tommy's strongest foot was his right foot. As everybody knows, the goals he scored and everything like that. Uh-huh. And whenever he was playing right back, he was going more to the touchline rather than coming across to open up the goal. And here, he had this is something the boss had. He seen things that would improve the finished article. And he moved Tommy from right back to left back. Unfortunate for Willie O'Neill, because Willie O'Neill was a very good defensive fullback. And brought in Jim, so it became a threat in both sides of the park.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard, the home of football in Glasgow and the West.
With William Hill, proud sponsors of the Scottish Cup. Please gamble responsibly.
You spoke of the Celtic supporters worldwide, Bertie.
Yeah.
The present Celtic manager, Brendan Rodgers, had yet to be born when Celtic won the European Cup. But a Celtic supporter from birth in Northern Ireland, What do you think of the job he's doing with Celtic now? Does that appeal to you?
Well, you can see, oh, definitely. Honestly, I watched that game yesterday in over in Lisbon, and I promise you, that was heartwarming. That had everything. I look back in the achievement we made in the games against opposition that were good opposition, and they all come flooding back. I'll tell you this much, none was better than that one I watched on Saturday, Sunday. Sunday.
The Rangers game you're talking
oh,
about?
Oh, yeah, the Rangers game, because it had everything in it. And the big thing about it was that they enjoyed. They had that composure. When things weren't going in the first 10 quarter an hour, they kept possession and never gave away the ball. What we were always achieved was that the movement off the ball. Murdoch and I always loved the likes of Lennox, Chalmers, Willie Wallace, because then all of a sudden you had so many options when you were on the ball. The two fullbacks come forward with Tierney and the big boy Lustig, they were coming forward. So we had so many options and they couldn't stop. We hemmed the opposition in their own half of the park. It wasn't how they played, it was how the Celtic allowed them to play. Yeah. And that's something that was so important.
The road up to the front door at Celtic Park now, Jim, is the Celtic way. Yeah. Is Brendan Rodgers adhering to the Celtic way?
Yes, I think so. Ronnie Dyla's record is not a bad one, you know. But being a rather calm Nordic person, I don't think the support took to him as easily as it did to Brendan as soon as he came in. So that helped Brendan. But he has just got the team to play with a bit more verve, a bit more panache, and he's getting some good results out of it as well, you know. His big problem will be next season if we want to make the step up. Every Celtic supporter regards Celtic as a big team. Big teams play in the Champions League.
Yeah.
And that's where he has got to get them next season and make a good fist of it as well, you know. Stay in the competition after the group stages. That's what the fans are expecting now, because hopes have been raised. But so far, everything's gone very, very well for him.
In 1967, Bertie, you won everything. Everything. Domestically and in Europe. Brendan Rodgers is going for a treble this season. Only the third man in Celtic's history after Jock Stein and Martin O'Neill. Mm-hmm. He hopes to get it. Do you think he will?
Oh, definitely. Because the most important people is the players. And the other ones is the people in the terraces. There's no doubt about it. They have the ability, Celtic players, and it's just them going out and proving it. I think Brendan Rodgers has done a magnificent job where he's only brought in two or three players. The good thing about it, and I used to criticise him myself, not in front of anyone, because I used to see him chopping and changing, and I'm saying, what is he doing that for? We played well last week. But what he's looking at was the actual pool of players that he has at this particular moment. And now he's registered, now he knows to achieve something at the highest level, which each and every individual Celtic supporter and person, they'll be looking for him to bring in a bit of quality to improve the full squad rather than just individuals.
Jock Stein had this incredible affinity with the people who supported Celtic, Jim. Brendan Rodgers appears to have that as well.
I think so too, yes. Because he's a very pleasant man. I mean, I've seen him before a game and after a game, and he's very happy to meet the fans, shake hands with the fans, although he's got a job to do. And Jock could be like that as well. Better after a game than before a game, but they've got a difficult job. I mean, I've never been in a position, but Bertie, obviously, manager of Partick Thistle and Hibs, knows how stressful it can be at times. And for a manager to compose or to be composed, as Brendan is all the time when he meets people like the press and supporters and things like that, I'm a great fan. I think he's done really well this season.
I met him,
Hugh, over at Dublin, I think it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
After a tournament over there where it was the finals against Liverpool against Celtic, and after the game, we'd have beaten them 1-0. And after I met him in the touchline, he was standing in the touchline. I'd been round about some of the boxes and such, and I went down. I says, how are you? He says, fine, thanks. We had the usual pleasantries and such like. And he says, do you know something, Bert? He says, that's one club I want to manage at some time in my career. I don't think he thought it would be as early as what he has. I'll tell you he's achieved that, and I'll tell you everybody's applauded that decision.
So he gave you the scoop. He told you long before he became the manager of Celtic that he wanted to be the manager of Celtic.
Exactly.
You're still sitting on the scoop, aye.
Well, it's just the way I'm sitting, Jim.
I was about to say comparisons are odious. Awful. Odious, yes. But inevitably, people will say, would anyone in this current Celtic side have made it into the Lions?
No, I don't go for comparisons at all. I mean, because you can always find a way of putting it that goes your way if you want it, right? What I'm expecting from this current team is to do the treble this season, right? Next season, to be nearly there again. It's hard to do a treble in successive seasons, but I want them to be in action right up to the last minute in each of those three competitions. And I want to see them in Europe. And I want to see them doing well in Europe. And I want to see them in Europe after Christmas.
Yeah.
And that's what you expect of a good team. And every Celtic fan nowadays thinks that their team's a good one. So let's take it to the next stage.
This is a new era. But Bertie, are you proud to know that the modern day Celtic started with you and 10 of your pals in Lisbon?
Well, you know something, Hugh, when I was at Birmingham, I must admit that I always felt that I would go back to Celtic at some time because of the love of the first and foremost Glasgow and the club, Celtic Football Club. I always thought that I would go back to there in some capacity, but I never ever dreamt of what we did achieve. But the manager had that in his makeup. He believed that this is something that's special. And that's what he did. Jock Stein, he put this into the dressing room. Mate, does it all believe?
We've agreed, Jim, that comparisons are odious, but legacies are another matter. If someone said to you, or said of you, Jim Craig, Lisbon Lion, would that do for you?
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah. My granddaughter phrased it very well because she said, Chloe, she's lives just outside Stirling, she said, somebody told me that Grandpa used to be a very famous football player, but nowadays he's just Grandpa.
Yeah. But
that'll do me.
Yeah. But Bertie, I'll ask you the same question. Bertie Auld, Lisbon Lion, will that do for you?
Very much so. Do you know, I'm proud. People come over and they'll say, Bert, is it all right if we have a photograph? I'll say I'm very disappointed that we hadn't have asked.
Yeah. How much has it meant to you to have that career that you had with Celtic?
Well, I was very fortunate because I'll tell you, I stayed in a scheme in Maryhill, Panmure Street, and I promise you the tenements were three-storey high and such like. And we used to, I was 200 yards away from two football parks, and I was 50 yards away from the street. And I promise you, football was the only thing we could afford in the days, whether it was a tennis ball or whether it was a big ball. And there were much better players than me. But for you to achieve something, you must deprive yourself of something.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this much, Hugh, I loved each and every individual. Big families and such, like went to school, played football with them. But they wanted to go to the pub. I was wanting to go to the pub, but I was wanting to be a footballer more.
Yeah. And you did, and you were, and some player.
Thank you very much. I'll tell you, I've enjoyed every minute.
And Jim Craig?
Well, every kid in those days that went to a Catholic school in Glasgow, because we did have the big divide back then, you know, it's a bit better through the years, but wanted to play for Celtic. And I was lucky enough to get a chance. I was even luckier to come in at a time like that when a manager of real substance came in and just had a dream and a desire and changed everything for the better and got us all to believe in ourselves, got the team organised, decided on a way of playing that not only suited us but would be attractive for the fans and made it work. And the players believed in him. So, I mean, the chances of that happening were not very good at the time, so I feel really privileged that I was part of it.
Jim Craig, Bertie Auld, it has been a pleasure and a privilege for me to speak to you. I thank you both very much.
Thank you, Hugh.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard, the home of football in Glasgow and the West.
With William Hill, proud sponsors of the Scotland national team. Please gamble responsibly.